Accession number 19910, reel 1.
Ernie Bambridge, reel 1. Where were you born, please?
In London, in West Norwood.
Which year was this?
1921.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in West Norwood?
Yes, that was most of the time I was living there.
Which school did you go to there?
From the very first school I went to, that was a school in Lambeth in Salters Hill. Then I went to what we used to call in those days a central school. I don't think they exist now, but it was midway between the sort of secondary school and grammar school.
And how old were you when you left school?
I must have been just short of 16 years old, I should think.
So that must have been 37?
Yeah. 36.
Did you get a job?
I did, yes. I went to work for Thomas Cook's, the travel agent, in their banking section, then known as Thomas Cook's Bankers Limited.
Where was this branch?
That was at Barclay. It was the head office at Barclay Street. In the West End, just off Piccadilly.
Is that the job you were doing when war was declared?
That's right, yes it was. I used to travel up to there during the early days of the war, yeah.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Well, I heard the radio broadcast that he made, yes. But that we keep hearing over and over again.
How did you feel about it?
Well, it's difficult to say after all those years. It was a bit awe-inspiring. I didn't know quite how to take things. I think we were at grandmother's or something like that at the time, and nobody knew exactly where things were going from then. And when the air raid siren went soon afterwards, everybody thought, well, that's it, the end had come, sort of thing.
Had it taken you by surprise?
Not really, no. Obviously, things were building up to that sort of situation. But I'd always been got the impression beforehand that if war ever came again, I mean, bear in mind it wasn't long after the First World War at this time, comparatively short time, and I was always taught that if war came again, that would be the end of civilization as we know it, sort of thing. It didn't really come to that in the event, fortunately. I remember being at the cinema on about the Friday before war was declared with my younger brother, and he popped out during the showing of the film and he sneaked back into me afterwards and said that he'd looked out of the window and everything seemed quite normal. There was no sign of a war. I don't know quite what we expected at that time.
Did the war affect you much at first?
At first, no, because there was the kind of phony war period when, after a sort of initial wonderment of what was going to happen, there was a kind of a lull in the proceedings. And the real problems came, of course, when bombing started and travel was interrupted and that sort of thing.
Were you living in West Norwood when the Blitz occurred?
Yes, I was, yes.
What was your address then?
The address was 5 Hubbard Road, West Norwood.
How do you spell Hubbard?
H-U-B-B-A-R-D, as in Mother Hubbard.
Can you tell me about your memories of the bombing, please?
One of the most vivid memories, I suppose, is when the docks were bombed, almost one of the opening phases of the bombing campaign against London. And my then fiancée and I were going to the cinema in that afternoon, and the docks were raided while we were in the cinema. So when we came out, there was a sort of a nasty looking glow in the sky to the northeast with the docks blazing, and in fact we stayed there all night in a shelter. I think I went to sleep on a very narrow wooden bench. I didn't disturb me very much, but that was my first recollection of the bombing.
That was right at the beginning of the Blitz.
That would have been at the beginning, yes, when the docks were raided. can't remember the date.
What other memories have you got of the bombing?
The other memories of sort of gathering together from all the people in the street to a shelter at a factory that was behind where we lived. And we used to go in there when the heaviest raids were on, because it was felt there was more protection there than in our homes. And also disappearing down to the Anderson shelter when things got heavy. Fortunately, I missed any injury or loss of life in the family, that sort of thing. But I do know of people who did get killed in that sort of period. And one of my uncles was killed as a fireman at that time.
How did that happen?
I don't know. I don't know the details.
Did many bombs fall on West Norwood?
I suppose we had our share, but nothing sort of above the average, I wouldn't have thought. Peggy's house got bombed at one time, and she had to sort of leave that.
This is your wife?
That's my wife now, yeah.
What street was that in?
That would be in Gibbs Avenue in Upper Norwood.
Do you remember any other specific streets or buildings that were hit in your area?
No, I can't recall any. No, I don't remember any sort of particular incident that I can bring to mind now.
Did any bombs fall in your street?
I think we were lucky in the street. I don't think it actually fell there. We had incendiaries round about, but most of those, fortunately, were dealt with.
What did you feel about the functioning of the emergency services and the bombing?
Oh, well, that was excellent. I mean, what sort of what can one say about that? It's just sort of people just doing what they felt they had to do and getting on with it.
How did public morale stand up to the bombing?
I think very well. Where I was, it's, people were sort of cussed it, and it was a bit of a nuisance. But nevertheless, you felt you had to carry on somehow, almost regardless, and get the work done. I did. I used to play a bit of music at that time, and did once or twice go to air raid shelters and sort of play along and have a sing-along and that sort of thing to try and keep things a bit cheerful and keep going.
What instrument did you play?
Violin, fiddle.
So you just went by yourself or with other musicians?
Oh no, with other musicians, and went along as a group and just sort of had a kind of jam session. And
what songs would you sing?
What songs will we? Run, Rabbit, Run was one of the sort of when they sound the last, all clear, White Cliffs of Dover. But you name it, you know those sort of. I think the wartime songs are quite well known.
The pop songs of the day.
That's right. Yes. Yeah.
Was it appreciated?
I hope so. I like to think so.
You didn't take a collection.
No, we didn't take a collection. Didn't try that. I think some of that music of that period now is very evocative. I mean, it's sort of, if you only got to play some of those tunes, it brings a whole sort of memories back of that time.
Whose idea was it to do this?
Oh, I can't remember. We played as a group anyway, and I think somebody probably had connections and said, would you come along next week and play?
You mean you were already performing as a group?
Yes, as a sort of semi-professional group, yeah.
What kind of dates did you have?
Oh, little local hops and things like that.
And what did the group consist of? Violin and what else?
Violin, piano, drums, guitar, I would think, as I can recall.
Was there any hatred of the German air crews who were carrying out the bombing?
Oh, well, what would you expect? they were doing their job, of course, but I mean, one gets a sort of a more mellow feeling towards it now, but at the time, we probably, yes, I should think there probably was hatred. You wouldn't feel very kindly towards people sort of dropping high explosive on you.
What happened to you next before you joined up?
I volunteered for the Air Force in, would be about October 1940, I think. And I wasn't called up until the following April. But in that time, I continued at work, continued going to my normal work until I was called up in April. So that would be about 6 months between signing on and being called up. I signed on at East Croydon. There's a recruiting office down there.
Can you take me through step by step the procedure for joining up, please?
Joining up? Oh dear, it's a little difficult. I'll try. I volunteered for air crew, and originally I was told that I was too short in the leg to be a pilot.
How tall were you?
Well, not much different to what I am now, really, about 5'4", would you say? Something like that. But it was, I was accepted as an observer or navigator. And shortly after being accepted in that role, I had another letter from the recruiting office to say that for some reason or other they must have changed the rules and I was now eligible to be a pilot. So would I go back for another interview? And I went back for another interview and was taken on to train as a pilot at that time. I seem to recall we went along to Uxbridge to be sworn in. I can't remember exactly when, but we went to Uxbridge overnight and were sworn in as airmen before actually being called up. But then when I was called up in April, the April 41, it's on my record there, I think, I was called up to go to Stratford-on-Avon. And I was billeted in the Shakespeare Hotel at Stratford-on-Avon. And that was a receiving wing where you had the initial training, discipline training and that sort of thing, inoculations, various lectures of certain sorts and all that sort of thing. And then we went from there after a very short period down to Torquay for the, I think that was called, I can't think, the initial training wing, I think it was, I can't remember the exact title. But that was where we did the square bashing and sort of initial training as a pilot for a short period. Didn't actually fly then, we learnt the sort of theory and aircraft recognition, as I say, discipline and drill and that sort of thing, just to make you know that you were an airman. After that, must have been about June, was it, that we went to America to do our initial flying training. The war, America had not come into the war at that time, so we went to Phoenix, Arizona.
Was your crossing of the Atlantic trouble free?
It was, yes. I don't recall any particular incident that sort of caused us any real concern. I think the boat was called the California. But we travelled across to Halifax in Canada. We had been kitted out before that with grey suits. Light grey suits, because America was not then in the war, so we weren't allowed to travel as military personnel into America. So we went in a undress uniform that was more uniform than the uniform itself, I think. We all wore these grey suits, and much to the amusement of the Americans, solar topies. But we went via Toronto, and we were put up in the Manning Depot at Toronto, as they called it then, before being sent down to Phoenix by train for flying training. That was carried out, as far as I can remember, by the Southwest Airways in America. And they were civilian instructors. But at first we went to an American Air Force base called Thunderbird Field just outside Phoenix at Glendale. And we shared that base with the Americans for a short time. I can't remember exactly how long. But that was where I first soloed and did my initial flying with an American instructor called Danny Darnell. And in the meantime, they were building a new base the other side of Phoenix at a place called Mesa, M-E-S-A, specifically for the RAF. And that became number 4 British Flying Training School. And when it was completed, we moved from Thunderbird over to Mesa. I can't remember a single thing about the move. We must have got there, but how we did it, or, you know, the means adopted, I just can't remember. That's a blank in my mind. But there was a beautiful base they built for us there, and there was a film made later called Journey Together with Richard Attenborough in, that was actually filmed later on at Falcon Field, as it was called, in Mesa. But that was long after I went there. I was only the second course to go out to America to train. And there we flew Stearman aircraft, biplanes, and then graduated from there to a trainer called Volte Valiant. And from that to what we called a Harvard, but the Americans called an AT-6 advanced trainer. That was the first aircraft with retractable undercarriage and beginning to get more like a real aeroplane. And that's where we did our final flying training before we got our wings at Falcon Field.
What was Phoenix, Arizona like for learning how to fly?
Oh, excellent. I mean, the main point in going there was that we were sort of almost 100% certain of continual fine weather. And of course it's nice, flat, open country to train.
Did the weather ever cause any problems?
Not in Arizona, no.
What was the disciplinary regime like then?
Fairly easy. In fact, when we were at Thunderbird sharing with the Americans, the American regime was very much harsher than our own. Ours was on a very casual basis. We were basically out there to learn flying, and that was that. We didn't sort of parade a lot. But the American Air Corps had a very rigorous system of discipline where the sort of senior cadets would be able to rile the other junior cadets, and, you know, with a view to instilling discipline, which in fact caused us quite a bit of laughter. It seemed a bit over the top to the RAF types.
Can you be more specific?
Well, not really, but I can't sort of remember exact details, but they would sort of, a senior cadet would be allowed to sort of stop a junior cadet and ask him to recite something or other of the sort of, I don't know, rules of war or the Declaration of Independence or something like that, just to sort of haze him and worry him, you know. And of course they had to sort of a much stricter discipline with meal times and that sort of thing, in sort of standing up tension and dismissing and all that sort of thing, whereas the RAF just sort of wandered in, wandered out and had their meal, and that was it. It seemed a very marked difference between the two. But of course that was only in the initial period out there. After we went to Falcon, we were RAF at that time, purely and simply. I think later Falcon took on some other cadets, but not during my period there.
What does the word haze actually mean?
How would one describe it? Worry, fret, disturb, yeah.
Did you fraternize much with Americans?
with the American civilians, not very much with the cadets, no, but we were, of course, received a lot of hospitality from the American folk. They were very good to us.
What did that amount to?
Invitations to meals and that sort of thing, and joining in social events. That was very good.
What kind of social events?
I can particularly remember going to a Remembrance Day celebration, I think it was, and seeing a football match with the Americans and trying to learn the rules of their football. And we were generally sort of made welcome and fated in Arizona.
Did you travel far afield?
I did take a leave once to, I went to the Grand Canyon, and we spent a weekend at the Grand Canyon, just simply on leave, enjoying ourselves and enjoying the more or less as tourists. And then we went on into Hollywood for a time and spent the time in Hollywood living with an American family for a few days before returning to Falcom. So we had quite a bit of social life out there as well.
What did the American attitude to the war seem to be?
I don't know that we really discussed it to any great extent. I wouldn't like to put a finger on it at the moment. We've heard a lot about it since. And of course, things were altering gradually at the time, because this was 1941. And I think it was almost on the day we left Phoenix that the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. So, of course, that sort of altered the whole situation as far as America was concerned. Before that, it wasn't really their war. I mean, but on the other hand, they had given us a lot of help in setting up these training schools. Mine was number 4 BFTS, but there were others in Glendale, California, and I think in Florida. There were one or two schools out there which had been started before America came into the war.
Did you observe the American reaction to Pearl Harbor?
Well, no, because that was more or less as I left, so the real reaction to it I didn't get. As I say, I left, I think it was almost on the day it happened, and I got back to this country in Christmas of that year, Christmas 41. So I missed their real reaction to it.
Any problems coming back across the Atlantic?
No. No, it took a long time. One zigzagged, of course. But and we travelled with a lot of Americans were on the ship. I forget the name of the ship now. But there were a lot of American, what they call CBs, Construction Brigade, on that particular ship. And it struck me what a devout lot most of them were. They were very devout with saying prayers and that sort of thing in the lower decks at that time, which something I don't think we did. But they obviously observed it and felt quite strongly about it. Whether that was just a particular bunch that were travelling in, I wouldn't know. My other recollection of that journey home is being on night watch duty, getting up at the early hours of the morning and being offered thick brown Stoker's cups of tea to start the day with, which on a ship tossing in mid-Atlantic didn't always go down too well.
What happened once you got back?
When we got back to, we came docked at Liverpool, as I say, I think it was Boxing Day, and we were taken by train to Boscombe, near Bournemouth, and billeted in various bed and breakfast establishments in that town, awaiting posting to the next part of the training, which would be operational training. And for some reason, after a short spell at Boscombe, we were then moved across to Hastings, not far from where we are now. And we were billeted in a block of luxury flats right on the seafront, which struck me as a little odd at the time, because we'd a lot of money obviously had been spent on training all of us, and we were then sent to a hotel or block of flats just a few miles across the channel from the Germans, and paraded every morning outside the flats to hear the latest posting instructions and distribute mail and be told what we were doing next. But nothing happened, so we were all right. And we spent most of the time at Hastings sort of visiting the local repertory theatre and the cinemas and just generally twiddling our thumbs until a posting came up and we were bit by bit distributed around the country to operational training units. And I was sent to Newark, Ossington, Newark near Nottinghamshire, to learn to fly a twin engine aircraft, and I trained on Oxfords, Airspeed Oxfords at that time. From there we went to Bicester, where I graduated to Blenheims, Bristol Blenheims, and flew those.
What did you think of those to fly?
Lovely. I enjoyed flying those, and small crew of navigator and an air gunner. And
you said that they'd queried the question of height when you joined. Did it prove to be any disadvantage in practice?
Well, not really, except that I was recalling only this morning that at that time my father made for me a cushion to go up my back to move me further forward in the cockpit. Quite irregular. I mean, it wasn't a sort of a government issue or anything like that. He just made this for me, which gave me a few extra inches, but I didn't really find it any problem, except that having graduated on Blenheims, I was posted to Finningley, where they flew Wellington bombers, and they had an OT on Wellingtons. But I really did think that was a bit more than I could handle with my height. And for once in my life, I think I took my future into my own hands and sort of asked to be transferred off, because I found them a bit of a handful to fly heavy aircraft with my height.
Why should that have been a factor?
I don't know, but it did feel that, it felt that way, that it was sort of...
But was it a question of being able to reach controls or
yeah,
strength?
Yeah, that's what I felt sort of at the time, I know. But I've very rarely taken my future into my hands, but I did on that occasion.
And what response did you get?
Oh, I was, as far as I can recall, my wishes were met, and I was sent back to Bicester for a further period on Blenheims with a view to going on light bombers, light bomber aircraft. But by this time, the Blenheim was going out of service in Europe. It was an old aircraft, and more modern aircraft were coming into use. I had an accident night flying when a bad landing sort of caused problems, and did a little bit of extra training to overcome that, but nothing really serious resulted from it. And I was initially posted to a Mitchell squadron in Norfolk, but before I could really join that squadron and take part in it, the posting was altered and we were sent to the Middle East, because the Blenheim by then was going further and further to other theatres of the war, and it was still operating in the desert. So I spent a long period going from we sailed by ship to Takoradi in Ghana, and on the Gold, what was then the Gold Coast, now Ghana, and from Takoradi